Chapter 128. We all have needs. We all have needs. My list, of course. Unsurprisingly, not unlike anyone else's and not worthy of analysis at this point in time. Or perhaps ever. I am standing on the corner with a suitcase in my hand, although, no, I'm not, as I mislaid my meagre belongings in a previous episode, Chapter 124, Get Lost. But here I am, all the same, standing in a back street, facing an abandoned house that has clearly seen better days, when suddenly I realize that I am not alone. But here beside me is a somebody. Not any old body, but a curious-looking somebody. He's got a motorcycle helmet on his head, straps dangling, and he's wearing an unzipped leather jacket that is far too small for him, and adorned with a variety of silver trinkets and treasures, along with an array of small fittings presumably procured from a hardware store or a bric-a-brac market. His arms hanging down by his waist, locks of coppery hair escaping from under the helmet exuberantly. And then this smile, radiant and unnervingly optimistic. I say hello, of course, but he does not reply, simply nods at the crooked, forlorn building before us and shrugs. Why not, he appears to say, though he has not uttered a word, suggesting that he is either mute or else the speaker of a different tongue, which he as yet has not offered to address me with. And then, like a floodgate, releasing gushing waters, words come rushing out in a disorderly and impressionistic kind of way, higgledy-pickledy and reshaped by his particular accent. Somewhere amidst the flow, he implies that we are miraculously aligned and in similar predicaments, in that we have no place to live. This is what I understand, at least. I look myself up and down, wondering what it is exactly that conveys such a message. Is it the bus conductor's jacket? Or the moth-eaten trousers, the buckled shoes, no doubt, so far down at heel. Whatever. He is not the first to see right through me and surely will not be the last. It's almost a welcome sensation being appreciated in this way. One can relate one's life story only so much before it begins to sound rehearsed and self-indulgent. Much better if whatever you have is hinted at and sensed. Being as I am on a kind of mission, I secretly begin to wonder if perhaps he has a musical side to him which I could take advantage of and incorporate into a new musical ensemble. He certainly has the look. A person must pick up on leads like these and be open to accept the gifts of chance and destiny. Once again, without apparently making any kind of proposition, he looks at me with those bright walnut eyes and smiles. Good with hands, he says, holding one up for me to consider. He reaches back and adjusts the small bag he has on his back, lifting it up to show me what it weighs and jangling its contents to give me further clues. Tools of some kind, I surmise. Curious it is to encounter such optimism on the first of one's last few days. If this house is to be believed, it could be an omen written into the script. It is then that I notice the large screwdriver in his dangling right hand. With his left, he reaches back into his bag and retrieves a hammer. Holding it up to me, with his eyes revealing the magic of it all, he then directs his gaze and deflects mine to the front door of the house, which has plywood carelessly nailed across it and a slot roughly cut to pass letters through, I suppose, bringing to mind the similar slot fashioned in hammered iron in the armoured helmet of so-called outlaw Ned Kelly. It is not easy to ignore these uninvited cultural references. We'll just have to go with them for what they are worth. And so it is. What will be, will be. He swaggers up the steps, this newly acquired and enigmatic companion of mine, and sets to work banging and levering at the door frame, right where a lock might be.